Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Podcart, and it's the third podcast, well, fourth maybe in a row, fifth of an exceptionally awesome guest and someone that is highly respected. He's a father, a lover, not a hater, and hi.
Hello.
Johnny Pictish Trail.
Hello. That could have been anyone then, couldn't it? You could just, that was such a great build-up, and then the audience now, oh, what? Oh, it's him. There was a guy the other day, I was doing this session with Vic Galloway, and there was a guy who tweeted saying, this Pictish Trail guy loves himself.
And really?
Then, yeah.
Why did he say that?
Because I do, I just... I was taking the piss too much on his on that show, and... I was chatting a lot about myself. I covered myself on that program as well. I did like a cover of my own song, but it was like in a different band. And so I retweeted that bit of that.
I've not heard that. I'm kind of halfway through the program. I've not heard the cover yet.
Oh, right. Oh. Well, I mean, I've spoiled it for you now, but I just do a cover of Silver Columns.
Oh, my God. But that is genius.
Well, I kind of won PRS. I thought I'd get a bit of money for it, you know. And two, it's also quite a different version, but yeah. And also, I couldn't be bothered. The BBC have this thing. Now, this is, maybe it's not a good idea for me to be slagging off the BBC publicly, because I love the BBC, they're amazing.
But
this whole, and maybe it's not just the BBC, but this whole thing of like having to do covers, I just find it just really like, you have bands who like sometimes get like two songs on a radio session and like one of them has to be a cover and you're like, fuck off. Am I allowed to swear at this
yeah.
thing? Fuck off.
You can say like, any swear word you want.
You get like, what? You invite a band on and then they have to do like a really bad cover of a modern, oh no, so I wasn't having that. So I just did a bad cover of Modern My Own Songs.
And you were playing with Malcolm Middleton when I did a takeover of Vic's show.
Oh, yeah.
And the fucking auto-tune.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, for anyone that doesn't listen to the podcast, I hate auto-tune.
Yeah.
But you do it in a total piss-take way.
Yeah. Well, it's, yeah. I mean, it's so such a big part of that record, of Malcolm's other
record. Yeah, exactly.
Record. And I just thought, well, I have to try and recreate that somehow.
But it's the hip hop auto-tune I can't stand.
The T-Pain.
Yeah, yeah, really right. bad. But they do it so excessively now.
Yeah.
But yeah. So you've picked six tracks.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be opening and closing the podcast with two of your tracks, just so that you obviously your ego is satisfied. You have kicked off Erasure.
Yes, my first track.
And Don't Dance.
Yeah.
Now, this for a lot of maybe some younger listeners, they might think that this is from Beverly Hills Cop or something.
Right, yeah. It has got a bit of a soundtrack kind of vibe to it. I think they're such an amazing band. Vince Clarke is just an incredible musician, an incredible producer. And those records they made with Depeche Mode and then with Yazoo and then with Erasure, like the sound is just incredible, and particularly on this record.
Don't dance to the rhythm. You can do it without. Don't dance.
people might scoff at Erasure, but like the first four albums particularly are just so many amazing hits and so many great songs. And on Circus, which I think is their second album, could be wrong, they're just every single sound is just really well placed, and it's really well balanced, and to me it still sounds quite contemporary. I know it's got like a nostalgic kind of 80s thing to it, but like the production on it isn't like too caked in reverb, and it doesn't sound cheesy to me. It sounds like, you know, there's a definite Hot Chippy vibe to it, and there's something about those sounds that haven't aged, and I really I love it. And I think Andy Bell's vocal is just really like, it's a big reference point for me in terms of.
And have you ever got to see them live at all?
I've never seen them live. I've only ever seen the videos of Andy sort of dancing around in assless chaps.
You kind of dance like that as well, though,
don't
you?
Well, maybe unconsciously I'd been, my entire live show is derived. they had because he would wear ridiculous costumes on stage and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, you wouldn't get me doing that. You'd do anything like that. Just amazing band. My sister played, like, was a huge Erasure fan, and to be honest, this first track, I could have picked a Depeche Mode track or a Pet Shop Boys track or Aha even, because that's the music that was like the sort of first music that I remember listening to and really loving, listening to it in the car stereo and having it really loud, and it was super melodic and it's really good.
And so I said to you before we started the podcast that I've noticed that the people that are choosing their songs, it's pretty much representative of them. And it, for me, listening to your music, it's quite obvious that you're into these artists. Mm. So your career, 10 years, Pictish Trail, is it more now?
It's more like, so I guess the first thing I started doing is in 2002. So the first, but went sort of full time from 2003 onwards, so it's been like 13 years.
Wow,
I'm old.
You are old.
I'm old.
And now you've obviously, you were part of Fence, but now you started Lost Map, and your roster is amazing, and you have a lot of new talent coming through. How difficult is it running Lost Map, or have you got a really supportive team?
I've got a supportive team, but it is a mess. It's like not a, it's not an exact science, the thing that we do. It's a total, and it's the same as through the Fence days. It's really DIY, and it's really sort of cobbled together. We do some things, like certain things really well, we've got like a great team. My friend Malcolm helps us with a lot of the press stuff and writing like biogs and stuff for the bands and approaching press, and Kate Canaveral, like my best friend pretty much, she's someone who we've worked together for years and years, and she's like my right hand person at Lost Map, and she handles all the distribution and the web shop stuff and comes up with all the, you know, comes up with ideas with for like live stuff, and we chat everything through, and she's certainly like a big sounding board for me. There's a few others, a lot of my friend Laura, and we're getting my friend David who does the design stuff. The actual team that makes Lost Map happen, we're friends, you know, which is a big part of it, and we're all really excited and passionate about music and stuff, but it's not a professional. Like, whenever we get called up, we get approached by bands, people send us in their demos and stuff, and like big bands have sent us in their stuff saying, I would love to release with you, and I've had to send a few emails going, you really don't want to release with us, you idiots.
How do you go about selecting who you want on the label, though? Is it just genuinely people you love?
Yeah, that's it, really. And it's usually people who I've met. It's very rare that I've like signed something just from listening to it.
Yeah,
I tend to want to get to know the people, and because there's nothing worse than dealing with a band you don't know or some people you've not met, and it becomes all a little bit too serious. I can't, like, there's a daftness to our approach, and there's like, we make, like I've probably said it a million times already, we make a lot of mistakes, and so it's kind of preparing the bands for that. We have to let them know that not all, you know, that a lot of bands go into their approach to releasing a record with a label would be like, oh, I want this to happen, and I want this review to happen with this magazine, and I want a premiere to happen here, and I want this to happen here, so the tour happen. And sometimes it's just my job as a label is making the bands realise that they had to have more realistic goals.
And because I'm someone that works with a label as well, so I totally get where you're coming from. And do you find that some bands, they lack this kind of experience, and they expect you to do everything, like your PR, book them a tour, you know, make the world happen?
Yeah, absolutely. Although as time's gone on, I've been like more upfront about what we can and what we can't do. And I don't want to sound like a cynical person at all, because I think it's a very funny time for music right now.
Yeah.
It has been for like the last 10 years, really, particularly in the last 5 years. The whole thing has just completely changed. And it's really easy to be cynical about it and be like, oh, this is, you know, what's the point? I think the main thing is to have ideas and to come into something with a story, and to come into, if you're releasing your music, you've got to think about how you want your music to actually reach people.
Yeah.
And it's not just a case of recording an album and coming up with some artwork and then putting it out. You have to think about a whole campaign afterwards.
Yeah.
And the market, that marketing side of things can scare off so many people, and it can be totally horrible. But if you inject ideas into it and something that's fun and something that's kind of inclusive and makes people engage with it, in a way that doesn't sacrifice your, you know, artistic credibility,
totally,
for lack of a better word, it's really rewarding, and it makes it a much more interesting thing. And that's why I've been, you know, that's why I'm involved with the label, that's why I'm involved with, as well as doing my own music, because I love working and on other people's music and helping them reach an audience that they wouldn't have otherwise.
I can die.
As your next track, one of my favourite bands, which I'm very happy about, and it's the Beta Band, or the Beta Band.
The Beta Band.
High Fidelity, and High Fidelity. So, obviously, there's quite a back catalogue. Why this song in particular?
I think this, Inner Meet Me, it's a really great song, and the three EPs from when it came, from when Sid came. It's a really big record for me. I remember, I was living in America at the time, and I would go to a record shop called Secret Sounds, my local record shop.
Right.
And more on that later.
Album, yeah.
That's it. It was named after the record shop. The guy, it was a proper High Fidelity moment. The guy was like, "Oh man, have you heard this band, the Beta Band?" I was like, "All right." And as soon as as soon as I heard that band, I was just like, "Wow, this is like." Didn't sound like anything else. It was there's something really. Their music is kind of like their artwork. It's like this. It's like a weird collage of things where you can kind of see all the parts. You know, it's not. You can see how they stuck things together in a really DIY way, and it's in a really deliberate way.
Mm-hmm.
So like acoustic guitar sits right on top of like really weird Gregorian vocals, which sat next to like an odd sort of. Hip-hoppy thing, and so it wore its influences on its sleeve and didn't apologise for them and was effortlessly cool and was colourful and fun and stupid, and there was so much about that really appealed to me. It was like a proper punk moment for me. I just kind of thought, because you could see the workings, it was kind of like punk in its way. I mean, maybe that's to discredit the record too much. I hope they wouldn't be offended by that, but it's like, you know, with punk, with that whole punk thing, you know, it's bass drums, guitar,
yeah,
loud, sneery vocal. You know, what you see is what you get type thing. It's not hiding behind crazy production. And the Beta Band stuff is so beautifully produced, but like was so unapologetic in all its constituent parts that it was just, there was something that was jumped out at you differently every mm-hmm. single time you listened to it. And you were like, wow, this is a band that aren't just doing like a singer-songwriter, they're not doing a singer-songwritery thing, they're using acoustic guitars as a in a way that was really, at the time, really exciting. I mean, acoustic guitar is now a bit of a dirty word.
It is, isn't it?
The sort of
singer-songwriter.
Well, this is it. The resurgence of the singer-songwriter in the last sort of 15 years has kind of ruined the instrument. But that record just kind of redefined that instrument for me, and that taking found sounds and samples and combining it with just really super melodic Beatles, Beach Boysy melodies. Oh man, there's so much.
But you kind of apply that to your own music as well.
It's a big reference point, definitely. Yeah. And I think I can't really hide that. It's the sort of music that I just love to listen to. So it's the sort of thing that I really like to make. And so I suppose there is quite a lot of. although I've not tried to directly lift any of their songs, their sound has definitely been incredibly influential. I think that particularly that band, the different players were so great at what they did, and they thought so much about how to present it as well. Like the videos, particularly throughout their entire career, but the videos, seeing those first videos for the first time around the 3EPs era, it's just bonkers. They were totally insane. Flying carpets, going through like mountain vistas on a really deliberate green screen thing, wearing animal masks and just being stupid. It was like, wow, this is music that isn't taking itself too seriously, which at a time when Britpop was happening, where it was all about how you looked and everyone looking crazy, you know, everyone being really thin and doing coke and, you know, their hair all off to the side and, oh, you know, that for this band to kind of come out with like facial hair and and, you know, big geeky specs and just, you know, and anoraks,
yeah,
and all that sort of, that I was just like, what is this? And it made me want to move back to Scotland. You know, that music, listening to that music made me, I was at, in my final year at high school in America, and
I didn't know you lived in America.
So yeah, this is where, that's where Secret Sounds was. It's in the States,
right.
In Connecticut. So yeah, I lived 4 years in the States. I did high school over there. So my
wow.
family moved over.
Okay.
Yeah, so, sorry, I should maybe explain that. where is he talking about? So yeah, I was living in America, and I suddenly knew that I needed to. I was falling in love with Belle and Sebastian's music and the Beta Band's music, and my the guy who ran the record shop was a guy who was a really cool guy. He was like, I was struggling to think of where to go for university, and he was like, well, you know, when we were kids, you know, we would just figure out where our favourite band was from and we'd go there. So, you know, we were all into REM, so we all went to Athens, Georgia, and that's, so you should just do that with your band. And I was like, okay, well, they're from St. Andrews. And so I went to St. Andrews.
Really?
That's it, yeah.
And that's the story.
That's it.
God, that's crazy.
And that's pretty nice, isn't it?
And how did your family feel about that?
Well, I think they knew that I didn't want to stay in America that much longer.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of, like, the whole sort of college system over there is kind of, like, it's incredibly expensive.
Mm-hmm.
It's really prohibitively expensive. And, you know, I had the chance to come back and go to university for free, a really good university. And I just didn't want to stay in America.
And what did you study?
I studied English Lit.
Yeah.
I studied English Lit and Psychology and Maths. And then after the first year, I got rid of Maths. And after the second year, I got rid of Psychology.
So you
I was like, tried to
English
do
lit.
Too much, just English Lit at the end, yeah.
Right. And
yeah.
Are your family still in America?
Yeah, my mum passed away about 4 years, 5 years ago. But she was living in America at the time. And my dad's, yeah, they were together. And my dad still lives there. My younger sister lives in Chicago.
Right.
So she's out there. Yeah.
And so, has your sister got an accent now?
She's got a really irritating transatlantic. I love her, but oh my god, she's one of these accents. It's like, don't live like this. Oh my god. She works in social media, entrepreneur. Mm. That sort of thing. She's really lovely. Really lovely. But yeah, I think if you were to meet her for the first time, sorry, Katie. If you were to meet Katie for the first time, yeah, you go, oh my god. She's like a hyper, yeah.
Great.
American Barbie doll. Which is great.
And your next artist, so James Yorkston, you've got a really good relationship with one another. How long have you known each other?
I've known James since 2003, really, when I first started at Fence full time. So I left university and did music straight away, signed on and got to work at Fence and was running the Fence thing, doing the live events and all that sort of stuff, and was playing as part of King Creosote's band. And so I met James through that, really, and because he just got signed to Domino just literally the year before that, I think. And maybe it was that year. But his star was on the ascendancy, and he had a really big record, Moving Up Country, that was like Rough Trade's album of the year. And
Don't let me down. Don't let me down. Thank you.
first met James, I was like, oh wow, this is this guy. And yeah, he's just an incredible songwriter, really, really great. Very, I don't know how to describe his stuff, you know.
I find his stuff quite effective. It, like, I get quite overwhelmed and emotional when I listen to him.
Right, yeah. He's incredibly lyrical.
Like, yeah.
It's quite dense at times. There's just so much stuff that he packs in there, and it's a real gift. He's got an amazing way with words. And a really good way with a melody as well, for someone who's, you know, his vocal range isn't exactly, I don't know how, you know, he's not Freddie Mercury, but which he'd admit himself, but, you know, there's so many great melodies in his songs, and it's, and he's someone who kind of comes from that, who got lumped in with a sort of folky thing, and there's definitely a part of him that, you know, that loves that tradition, but he's also someone who's not into the sort of over ornate folky stuff. He doesn't do any weird guitar tunings. He doesn't do anything too time signature weird or anything like that. He doesn't show off.
Mm-hmm.
He's an amazing guitarist, but he knows that he doesn't need to show off in his songs. The songs can stand up for themselves, and they're strong enough to do that. And yeah. I think that's quite brave, because yeah. There's a lot of, you know, in that world of singer-songwriters, men with acoustic guitars, there's like a lot of one-upmanship, and I think that's always been around. You know, who's who can do the, you know, the who can play Angie the fastest, and you know, all that sort of bollocks. It's fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
And like, my relationship with the folk thing has been really odd, because throughout my entire career, I've been described as a folk artist. Even this recent record, I've seen like the F word being used.
I don't understand that though.
It was just totally insane to me. But like, not that I'm, like, you know, I love listening to folk records, but I can't, you know, there's nothing that I do that's even remotely.
I can't even the thing with you, and I guess with bands like the Beta Band, I was mentioning to you about Super Furry Animals. I can't really pigeonhole any genre. You take so many different elements. I mean, the new record, it's the elements of hip-hop, electronica, and everything like that. So, yeah, folk is bottom of the list, I would say.
It's quite far back.
But,
yeah, so James' stuff is amazing. And he's been someone who's been really supportive throughout my entire career. We've done lots of shows together, and he's really fun to hang out with. And he's a funny guy, because he's quite a private person, you know, but he, with the people that he's close to, he's very generous with,
mm-hmm.
and he's like, we've had lots of chats, and he's been just really supportive throughout my entire career, and was really there for me when the fence thing was kind of coming to a close. He was a big supporter around that time.
This, I'm probably putting you on the spot here. What was there a first song that kind of made you think, right, I want to do music?
The Beta Band stuff actually was a lot like that.
Yeah.
Hearing that for the first time, and kind of hearing how like they made that music, and made me think, oh, I really want to be. I'd really love to make music like that. And then immersing myself in the Fence stuff, that was mm-hmm. just like over the 4 years that I was at university in St Andrews, with each progressive year I kind of got more involved in the Fence thing, so by the end of it I was kind of, you know, working there full time, and but yeah, just witnessing that, all the music that was coming out of that town, it was and seeing everyone play on each other's records, and well, not playing each other's bands and stuff, and singing along with each other's songs, it was that was a big part, big gateway drug to making my own music.
And are you're a multi-instrumentalist, is
kind
it fair
of.
To say
it's not really,
or do you dabble?
I don't even think of myself as an instrumentalist. I think of myself as a mentalist. I can't play anything that well. I can only, it's one of those things where there's been so many embarrassing times where you'll go to a party and some arsehole will bring out a guitar and then pass it around, and then they'll be like, oh yeah, play a song.
I fucking hate
those
parties.
Like, one, I'm not going to play my own songs at a party, and two, I don't know anyone else's songs to play anyone else's songs at a party, and also, I think I need to leave this party. So, the stuff that I do, a lot of it's trial and error, you know, so like I'd be recording stuff at home, and it'd be with a keyboard or a drum machine, it'll just be like trying stuff out, and then, oh, that doesn't work, right? Oh, no, that doesn't work. And just kind of constantly taping over mistakes. This is kind of how I make music, really. And same with playing guitar and singing.
And you've got quite a band now.
Well, they can all play, thank fuck.
But so you've basically got your roster playing with you.
Yeah, who's in my band? So, yeah, at the moment I've got Suze Bear from Tough Love. I've got Ian Stewart, who's also in Tough Love, and lots of other bands in Glasgow, Phantom Band and Cuddy's Gym. Joe Cormack is on guitar, and he's from the Isle of Egg. He's a good pal, and he used to play, still plays in a band called The Massacre Cave, who are a metal band from the Highlands. Very good, egg metal. And Kim Moore on viola, and lots of effects and keyboards and backing vocals.
Yeah.
Kim Moore does music under the name Wolf as
yeah.
well. And she's incredible. It's a really great band. I'm really lucky to have had like this, particularly for this record, it's like it's worked out really well. Suze from Tough Love is really responsible for putting a lot of it together. She's like a total production genius, and she just, when I gave Suze the record and was asking her for help on how to put the band together, she's taken care of the whole electronic side of things in terms of the arrangements and knowing where things should fit and getting the right equipment and suggesting what the actual setup of the band should be, which has been good because it's the sort of thing that I was quite intimidated by going mm-hmm. into the thing. I mean, this is the first record I've done under the Pictish Trail name, where I've used a different producer for the whole thing, and it's the first record I've done under that name where I've not been any part of the production really.
Yeah.
I've been there when the track's been made, but it's not as lo-fi or as DIY as the previous stuff. And in the same respect, I wanted to take a back step with the live band a little bit and rely on other people's input, because I know what I can do. And I know I can do well. I can talk shit really well. I'm quite good at that. I can drink really well. I can sing all right. But and I like fiddling about on my electronic machines that I've got that make weird noises. But it's not enough to kind of create a full band sound. And Suze had a really good. She just knew what it needed, and she knew what players would fit right for it. And she,
yeah.
And the rest was just really easy. It was great. So we've been doing lots of rehearsals this year for the live shows that we've done, and it's the first time I've been able to do a live performance that has elements that sound like the record. You know, before all my stuff was just like I love the stuff that I did, and I'm sure I'll still do that sort of thing. But it was usually a stripped down version of what I'd done on record, or it'd be like a sort of full-on rock band version of songs. Whereas this, it feels like the electronic stuff does provide the backbone to the whole,
yeah.
to each song and its live performance. And knowing how to work with that has been, or getting to grips with how to work with that has been a big learning curve for me.
Yeah,
but it's cool.
And obviously, speaking of electronic, your next track is Boards of Canada.
Thank you.
kind of described it perfectly as to how they make you feel when we were discussing.
Yeah, they're one of these bands that just... everything about that group just... and their development as a group has just been huge for me. I'm such a massive fan of their stuff. And their music, particularly in a beautiful place out in the country, has this sort of thing which conjures up so many different emotions that seem to conflict with one another, but they just sit so right. So there's something about some of their music that has a real sort of nostalgic sadness to it, like an old 1970s, 1980s Open University programme about maths.
That's you know so I mean? True!
But then, like, contrasting with, like, a sample-driven hip-hop element, and then there's also sort of a quite... There's parts of it that feel quite cold, and there's but sat next to sounds that feel really warm and really affecting and really just really beautiful. And but then there's also an underlying sinister thing that goes on in their music. They'll sample children laughing and just really weird sounds that just very brooding synth lines that kind of creep in. That just have a sort of weird darkness to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all of those things that together just makes you, gives you all the feels, as people obnoxiously say these days. But it does, you know, it's that sort of music that you instantly have an emotional reaction to it. It's incredible. And the great thing about them is that I think they've really thought about how to present their music as well. Like the visual part of it is such a beautiful aspect of what they do. It's the colours that they use in the releases, and even the story that that comes with the records. You know, there's so much mystery that surrounded that the two brothers, but it was only until Campfire Head Phase came out that they admitted and like they revealed that they were brothers. And when that happened with that record, because it had acoustic guitars being sampled in it, and it had a warmth to it that was different to the stuff they'd done before, and it felt a bit more intimate. I mean, maybe I've overthought this thing, but there was something about it that was just so real on that record. It didn't feel, you didn't feel too separate, you felt much closer to the band and to their music upon hearing that album, I felt. And they chose the album to reveal the fact that they were brothers, and you were like, oh wow, this is like, it's totally perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, I hope they are brothers. Maybe they've just made that up.
You never know.
But it's just like being a fan of the band and then getting to that point where they reveal that, and you're just like, oh wow, this is amazing. It's really cool. I think it's a really, the way they've kind of refused to go out and do stuff live, you know, they've not done anything live for years, and the way they've kept that control over their image and stuff is a really difficult thing to do.
Like
insanely difficult thing to do. It's so shrouded and smothered in mystery. Like, I don't know how they've managed to make, because they must have had so many offers for to do live stuff. I mean, they must just get offered stuff all the time.
Yeah
So it's incredible.
So I have to talk about Egg.
Oh, yes.
And because you are in love with it so much, your home. Howling Fling, which is the festival that you now do, is it going to go as long as you want it to go?
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I don't really know. I kind of, like, I don't really have a plan ever. Everything's kind of made up on the hoof. And so it's all just about what else is going on at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And but yeah, you know, I'm definitely going to live the rest of my life on Egg.
Yeah,
I've just built a house and.
Are you still in the caravan or are you in the house?
We've left the caravan.
Wow.
We're now in the house.
That's quite sad.
I do miss the caravan. Yeah, I do put the caravan down as my address. That's something.
It's quite Father Ted.
It's amazing, this caravan. Oh my god. Like, I've lived in it for like 4 and a bit years.
Wow.
5 years.
Because it's automatically, if you say caravan, everyone is going to think it's something that you put on the back of your car.
Mm.
But I'm assuming it's like a motorhome.
It was like a bigger sort of static caravan.
Right.
So it had like two bedrooms and it had a kitchen and a boiler and a big fire in it. And
God.
Yeah, it was like a flat, I guess, you know, but it was just with really thin walls. Fucking freezing in winter. But, oh my God, it was brilliant.
And but Howling yeah. Fling, it was Bossy Love were on a podcast and we were talking about Howling Fling.
Oh, had they already been on at that point? Had
yeah,
they been on,
yeah.
All right, cool, they've been on there.
And they said that it was like their favourite show of the year.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And they said...
Did they really say
yeah,
that?
Honestly, across my heart. And they said that it was basically like taking people from Glasgow... putting them on an island and then losing all inhibitions and just going for it.
Yeah.
But everyone that I speak to, like Joe Rattray from Admiral Fallow and countless other people who have said, I say to them, is it really that good? And they're just like, you can't experience, it's just amazing.
It is incredible. It is like, I remember the first one we did, the first like fence away game was like 2010 and, there was so much stuff wrong with that event. Like, we ran over by 6 hours. We ran out of food. I think we ran out of booze.
Oh, no.
But, like, everyone by the end of the weekend was like, that's the best weekend of my life.
Really?
Yeah, it was insane. And I think that's there's something about being on that island. And the journey to the island is part of it, I think. You know, you're kind of removing yourself from normal everyday life and by the time you get up to Arisaig or Malaig, wherever you're getting the ferry from, you're already feels like a different part of the world. And then taking that ferry trip over and then arriving on this place that looks like Jurassic Park, it's fucking amazing. We have the theme tune playing out on bagpipes. And
really?
No, but if we did, that would be amazing.
You need to do that next year, though. You better do that next year. And so have you started booking for next year?
Well, so this is the thing, is that we do it once every 2 years.
Right.
And we're going to we did a smaller one this year, although it wasn't really that much smaller. It was like, it wasn't really smaller at all, we just had one less venue. but we thought, all right, we'll do a smaller one this year. I just had a child and there was a few other sort of factors that sort of played in. So thought we'll do a small one in 2016, we'll do a bigger one in 2017, and now the small one has happened in 2016 and it went really, like, it was the most easy one to organise. Now I'm like, oh, let's just keep doing small ones. So I'm like, I'm having an airing about doing one next year. I'm sure people would want it to happen. It's quite an overwhelming thing to happen it changes the dynamic of the island. Certainly, you know, it's a big influx of people, and but it's still, you know, on the scale of things, it's a tiny, you know, it's a micro festival. It's really small. So, I'm still umming and ahhing about it. There is an act who we approached to play for this year's one who pulled out at the last minute and said that he would do next year's one, and then he's pulled out of that as well. And so there's a bit of me that thinks, okay, well, I'll wait till, if I can find a certain specific act to play next year, then it's on. But unless I find something really, really special, I'd rather keep it once every 2 years. But yeah, there's a definite sort of wish list of acts.
Are you allowed to tell me?
I don't know if I can, because then if I say
You don't say it on the podcast. Yeah. You can tell me off air.
Okay. if anyone wants to know, just get me drunk in a pub somewhere and I will spill.
And he will, you know. So Hot Chip. Now, Hot Chip, this is what I want. I think for me, people went down two different lines. You either were LCD Sound System or you were Hot Chip These guys. And for me, it was LCD Sound System. And I think it's just because Over and Over did my head in. But they've got some really underrated tracks, I think, that probably deserve more attention, including this one.
Oh man, this tune is amazing. Full album. Yeah, Hot Chip, man, I think they're an incredible band. It's funny that LCD Sound System thing, because yeah. I was kind of like, I wasn't really aware of LCD Sound System until Daft Punk is playing at my house, but Hot Chip had been around for quite a bit of time before that. So I knew Alexis from, he used to work at Domino, and so he'd come to a lot of the shows that we do when we were, like Fence shows when we were down in London, and he's a big fan, he's really into the Fence thing, and he's just a really cool dude, and it, like his songwriting I think is just so perfect, his voice is just amazing, and Joe Goddard's production and his Joe's songwriting and Joe's voice is just the perfect complement. Like, they work together so well, it's just such a perfect thing. And for me, like, that band, they've just managed to capture a thing that's like, it's just the perfect balance of like emotional pop music with like stupidness. Like, there's a little bit of daftness and silliness, and I guess that kind of comes from the sort of, there's similar to the Beat Band in some ways, like that sort of daftness and like in jokes and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, there's something like, for me, they're like my generation's New Order. I think they've got like so many great big hits, so many.
That's
big songs.
A really good way of describing them, actually.
And I think whenever they release the greatest hits, that'll be like people are like, whoa, yeah, God, they wrote that.
Yeah,
they wrote this, they wrote that. Like, they've just got so many. Do bands release greatest hits these days? I guess they don't have to. If
I think bands like Take That.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe they'll never do one.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll have to do a playlist. But this Craft Dinner, like, so that it's like a really beautiful song. Like, the lyrics are like, all the people I love are here, all the people that I love are drunk, and it's like he sets a scene, Alexis sets the scene of being like in a club with his pals. It's a really simple melody, like a really bold house beat that's over the top of it, and it turns into like a weird little electro funk workout with a sax solo at the end. It's beautiful, but it's all about a craft, like microwave dinner.
Yeah.
And so there's like a sort of stupidness in there, which is like, it's great. It sort of takes out any sort of earnestness from the song and kind of makes it just fun. And that's what I really like about their writing style. I think they're good. But I think you can love both Hot Chip and LCD.
Yeah, no, totally. And now I accept that. I think it's the whole MTV2.
Generation. LCD are way cooler, definitely.
I don't know. I think they're both in the equal measure.
Really?
Yeah.
I suppose there is a nerdiness that they kind of both.
Yeah.
I'm sure they've been tagged with the nerdy thing. Both been tagged with the nerdy thing a lot, but yeah.
And so you briefly said earlier about managing.
Oh God. It's something I swore I'd never do.
Why?
Just because it's so weird to try. Like, there's not really any fixed managing a band. There's not really a fixed way of doing it. There's not really a rule book. So managing a band can mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
It can mean like just giving them advice, or it could be actually micromanaging every single part of what they do in their day. And there's different forms of management. I mean, I've had management in the past, management with Silver Columns, and I've worked with bands that have had, I've been in bands that have had management and all that sort of stuff. And so I've seen how different managers operate, and every single one is different. Every single one. And there's something about it that just, I think managers are, like, they're good. There's some great people, really enthusiastic, passionate people. But the manager's job is to be an asshole and to get like the best, right?
It's so true.
It's to get what's best for the band. And so you've got to be wide, and you've got to totally push for like, oh, that's good. Can we get more?
Yeah.
Can things be done in this way? And you've got to be quite thick skinned, and you've got to be kind of like just constantly, yeah, this is good. Can we also get this? And
do you ever feel sometimes, do you ever sit and go, oh my God, I'm such an arsehole and I can't believe I'm pushing for this.
Every day.
Really?
Well, I think that I've now taken a sort of a back seat on the management thing with that. I kind of, I now tend to just look at the managerial stuff I do, with specifically with Tough Love, to be more on a sort of release by release basis.
Yeah.
And I'll let them do their own thing, because, you can be too controlling, you can kind of get too involved in that side of things, and it can just be a bit mad. So, yeah, but yeah, this is, you can't escape that feeling of, in order for the band to get the best thing, I've got to be a dick here. And I've got to be constantly pushing on each of the different team members. It's a lot like, for any good like album campaign or all that sort of stuff, there's a lot of different people involved. You have radio pluggers, you have PR people. And within PR people, you have people who deal with digital side of things. And then, I don't know if this is really boring.
No, but like, it's interesting.
You know, like the people who do print press, but then you have people who do print press just for national publications. And
yeah.
You have people who do print press for regional publications, and some only for specific regional publications. And then you have a distributor, and then you have an agent, and then sometimes you're dealing with a tour manager. And so there's a lot of different people who are involved in the marketing and pushing of an album that aren't just the band members.
Yeah.
And you've got to manage them as well, because
yeah.
you've got to, you know, and that's the, with also being the sort of label guy, that I had like a sort of double job there with that. And it, there's always conflicts. There's always massive conflicts of interest where that's concerned. And so it's a difficult tightrope to balance on, I think, sometimes. But it's been cool as well. Like, I've really loved it. I've really loved working with the band in that way. But
I
don't feel good about myself.
Well,
it's horrible.
No, but you're one of the better managers that I've dealt with in
Thanks.
The past, and I'm not just saying that.
I think you have to. It's about being honest, isn't it? And
yeah.
I think that's it. If you can kind of, because I try not to push for things too crazily. Because you could just, it could just never end. I think if you have a good understanding and you're pals with everyone and you're not trying to dupe anyone,
yeah.
then that's the...
Know your limits.
Yeah, that's it. Some people push it too much and you can spot them straight away and they're fucking assholes.
Yeah.
And you're just like, right.
Yeah.
I don't even want to deal with that. It's put me off the band's music because that person's
yeah.
such a dick.
No, and that's true. And it's an unfortunate thing. Penguin, why this song?
Well, I would have chosen Sweet Discontent, but I know that they played it on their podcast
right.
when they played. But Penguin was like a, it's a song I've covered of theirs even. And it was on that first EP that they did, and I remember listening to their Junk EP tons before I even approached the band.
Mm-hmm.
I knew Suze because she played in the band Monogonon, who were on Lost Map. And
the singer's now on an IKEA advert.
Yeah, have you seen that?
Wow.
That is, it's weird because it's like an IKEA advert that starts like a weird Monogonon video. And you're like, what's going on here? Has he done that? So yeah, I was listening to that Tough Love first EP. I listened to that so much before I even approached them. And there was something just really affecting about the songs and just really... I don't know what it was. It just had this thing that I just constantly want to listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what you get that with
a band?
Well,
Slammer is the track that I, but it reminds me of growing up with in the 90s and listening to so many bands like Nirvana and stuff like that. And it just has that melodic, I guess, like Smashing Pumpkins and Hole, and it's got that real grungy. It's so good.
It's the perfect marriage of sound that thing that they do is like the melodies and the lyrics and the just the way the effortless cool singing and then the really great production, just the way that those two work has produced some like an album of really really great songs.
Yeah,
that I just think are incredible. And yeah, Penguin's the last one on that first EP, and it's just that as soon as that one would finish, I just want to listen to the whole EP again.
Yeah.
I'd be listening to it like six times a day.
That's great, though.
It's a short EP. I just was totally addicted to it. And I love the songs, but there was something just about the sound of it and the feel of it that I just, you get that with certain bands, but I've not really had that with a specific band since I was like a teenager and listening to like the Bends over and over again.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's one of those things where those were that when I was a teenager, just listening to, favourite songs over and over again on repeat just because the sound of them just made you feel like made you feel invincible. And that's how I felt about Tough Love when I heard that record. And I was just like, this is brilliant. And yeah, so meeting them after that was quite intimidating. probably for them too.
So have you got any plans to, is there anything new coming out on the label soon or?
Yeah, what have we got? So there's a band called Lazy Day who've got a single that is coming out. In fact, it might be out by the time this thing comes out. But it's,
well, this is coming out tomorrow.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Well, their track is coming out on Monday.
I fucking love that band.
Yeah, they're really good.
Oh my God. So the split with them and Tough Love.
Mm.
That song, just their last two tracks have really blown me away. Phenomenal. I'm so happy about that.
It's really good. So we've done, and they're working on some other new material as well. So that's coming out as a 7-inch soon. And shit, I've probably given all that away. Tilly will be really upset. Sorry, Tilly. and who else we've got? There's an act called Ed Dowie, who is from London, who has just done an album. And this is one of the rare times this has happened, that someone's just sent me an album out of the blue without me knowing them. And I've heard it and gone, this is amazing, we have to do something with this. And so that's, and now me and Ed are really good pals, so it's all worked out well. And his album's coming out in January, we've got a single out in October. And there's a band called Manuela who've just started working with, and she is a really cool kitsch singer-songwriter. Her partner is Nick from Franz Ferdinand, ex-Franz Ferdinand, and he's produced this album of music with her, and I think we're going to be doing that later on in the year, although I'm still waiting on artwork. Should they be listening? And so yeah, there's a few bits and bobs, and then there's like more singles from the Pictish Trail thing, and then Kid Canaveral as well. There's like more stuff to come,
and their new stuff is I've loved it.
Oh cool,
it's been really good. You've got a tour coming up.
Yep, starting on next Saturday.
Yeah.
Oh god. and then 2 weeks on the road with the band. So starting in Leith on the 1st of October.
Yeah. And this album, is it done and been what you've wanted it to do and be?
Yeah, I think to be honest, for me it's just started now, like it's because it's just out and people are just starting to listen to it. I'm trying to work out how I can, you know, keep the campaign going for like the rest of the year and into next year. There's like I'm working on new versions of some of the songs and pulling together some remixes and stuff, and mm-hmm. so that they'll get released at, like, over the course of the next year or so. And I want to kind of like, I want to play tons with this band because I'm really enjoying playing with the band and people are responding to it really well. Like, people are dancing and people, you know, don't normally dance at my gigs.
Yeah.
And it's been happening where folk have just been dancing to the new tunes, and it's like, it's a really good feeling. And I want to, and I really enjoy performing. Like, it feels, it doesn't even feel like my band in a weird way. Like, I kind of feel like it does, obviously, but like, there's, because I don't have to, you know, be playing guitar all the time or anything. I can concentrate on the singing. It feels like,
is it a breath of fresh air for you?
Yeah, I'm actually enjoying it.
You know? Yeah.
I mean, not that I wasn't enjoying it before, but like, I can get really into it, and I've been busting out dance moves. And that's,
and playing with this band, has it inspired you in terms of writing new material already? Are you starting to think of new ideas?
I've been thinking about it, but I don't know what it's going to be yet. So I'm going to try and work on some new weird versions of this, of the current songs, and try and for a soundtrack that I'm doing, and for a friend's film. And I think from there I'll see where that direction takes me, and see if that will be like a new thing. But I don't really know. I think kind of, it'd be interesting to see if this album kind of stands on its own as like the only album I ever do like this, or if there'll be a few others that have a more pop sound, or I don't know how it's going to go. I think maybe the live band thing will certainly influence it. But yeah, it's kind of an empty page at the moment, which is I'm excited about as opposed to worried about.
Side, la la la, you've stolen.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.